Talk to me about the transition from whatever you're doing at that time to like full time for Snacklins.
Yeah. So I actually was, I had just come off of a career in radio where I was co-hosting a morning show in Washington, D.C. For the top 40 stations. I worked for two of them for like about 8 years or so. I guess I was just tired of introducing Justin Bieber, though I love the Biebs personally. Yeah. I just could not hear his songs every hour, every day of my life. Right. So I think that, I was just kind of out of there at that point. I kind of had the same schedule because I was working such crazy early mornings that everyone who has the afternoon off is literally either a morning show host or a chef or a cook, right?
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. On today's episode, we are going to talk about vegan pork rinds. And more importantly than that, we're going to talk about how even though the consumer packaged goods market is owned by a lot of big companies and big dogs, how it is never too late to start an innovative snack and an innovative product to disrupt the industry. So to talk to us about that, I am not your expert, but I am here with the man, the myth, the legend, Sammy Snacklins. How are you, Sammy?
Good, man. You can tell by my cheeks. I'm definitely the snack expert, man.
So, I wasn't going to say anything. And the first time that we spoke, one thing was extremely clear, and it is your passion for snacks. So we're definitely going to dig into that. I know you've had a lot of snacks all over the world, and I want to hear some about that. But first off, vegan pork rind, that is, sounds like a contradiction if I've ever heard one. Tell us what Snacklins is and how did this start?
It's even more of a contradiction than that, honestly. So I'm a Muslim, and I was at a bar with some of my buddies. They had made this bar bet to like make a vegan pork rind. And I, at the time, kind of had this reputation for making weird stuff in some of the kitchens I worked in. So I took it wholeheartedly. I was like, I can do this. And, I went home and got some mushrooms, got some onions, ended up finding some yuca. And within, a few months of tinkering around, boom, you had the Snacklin, right? The first ever vegan cracklin or vegan pork rind or chicharron, whatever you want to call it. And I think from there is when it really started to pivot to what it is now. Right. You know, it was literally once it was released is when we realized, wait a second, this vegan pork rind's funny. And yeah, we're like selling it and our buddies think it tastes good, but why are so many other people buying this? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And then we kind of realized that, oh man, really what we have here is we just have like, a super crunchable, craveable snack that's made with simple ingredients, mushrooms, onions, and yuca. It's 90 calories for the whole bag. And it's like, fresh. It's made with fresh stuff. You know what I mean? And so I think those kind of aspects really are what, really are what Snacklin stands for now, even though it did start off as a pretty sweet bar bet. Which definitely the most successful bar bet I've
I'm
ever
sure
had.
The guy who made the bet with you thought that it was a pretty safe bet to like make a bet that the Muslim guy can't make a pork rind. Like,
yeah,
I would think that that's a pretty safe bet. So what did you win anything other than like having a successful business? Like has that guy at least like bought you a couple beers or something?
Honestly, yes. All my friends have definitely bought me beers since then because we all just sit back and kind of laugh. Yeah. I mean, it's been a crazy roller coaster, and to be honest, like we've been very kind of lucky that we kind of fell on trend. Right. Like we didn't really plan on using the mushrooms. We didn't really plan on being this low calorie snack. We didn't really plan on being grain free per se. We didn't plan on being gluten free or vegan. We're planning on being vegan, but not gluten free or any of that stuff. Right. We just kind of set out to make something that was delicious. Wanted to make this delicious vegan pork rind for my friends. And what turned out was this, was something else. It was, I think it's one of the most delicious snacks on the market. I think that where a lot of companies are kind of hitting to you saying that, hey, we want to hit all these attributes in the nutrition panel. You know, we came in saying, hey, we want this to taste really good. Right. And it just happened to hit those attributes, you know?
Yeah. And at the time of the bar, the famous bar bet, what were you doing as far as work goes? And talk to me about the transition from whatever you're doing at that time to like full time for Snacklins.
Yeah. So I actually was, I had just come off of a career in radio where I was co-hosting a morning show in Washington, D.C. Cool. For the top 40 stations. I worked for two of them for like about 8 years or so. I guess I was just tired of introducing Justin Bieber, though I love the Biebs personally. Yeah. I just could not hear his songs every hour, every day of my life. Right. So I think that, I was just kind of out of there at that point. I kind of had the same schedule because I was working such crazy early mornings that everyone who has the afternoon off is literally either a morning show host or a chef or a cook, right? And so I end up hanging out with all these kind of restaurant industry people in the middle of the day just because they were available. You know, they were free to have lunch. They were free to hang out, to go get, to go get something to eat or just to go see an art museum or whatever, right? And I think that kind of friendship led to me over the years of me just like randomly helping out my friends, to me staging, to me realizing, oh man, I really like this, and kind of taking advantage of all my friends that worked in the industry and yet my past radio career, and like, pushing forward to get like, I staged like at a restaurant that, got on the Michelin guide, right?
You're saying you staged?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Okay. It's pretty much like an apprenticeship for cooks.
Okay, cool.
Right. So I started like, I pretty much, you go and you work for free just to be like, you go to learn and kind of see what they're doing. And then if you're really good and they offer you a job, and I end up getting a job at this place. And I worked there for, 6 months, but that was kind of at that same time, was around the bar bet time. And so really it was just this kind of side hustle, and it was me just making the snacks on my nights off, working till 4 a.m. and crushing through. I'd have dehydrators throughout my house that I just have on timer. So every 4 hours I'd pull something out and fill it back up, and I'd go to my buddy's restaurant at night and fry in the basement when no one was there, just so we could fry all the snacks and, put it in bags and season it and whatever we had to do. And really the transition was like, it was a slow roll. I mean, I'm not going to lie. We didn't have this like overnight within 6 months. Wow. We had such a, it was like 3 years, Yeah. 3 years we were trucking along at that point. Like the first big thing was it got too busy for me to do it part-time. So, we hired somebody because I knew that I could make more money working my regular job. So we hired someone to work part-time, Sylvia, who's like our number one employee, first employee after me, right? She came on and she, just started helping us make snacks. And I knew that I could serve tables or do some odd side job like that and make enough money to not only pay myself, but also pay Sylvia for making Snacklins. And I think it was just like this slow transition. Like the first person that actually became a full-time Snacklins employee was Sylvia,
Yeah.
Not even me, because I was still like, no, I still got, I still have to, like, we got her on working 40 hours a week before I did. And then right after she did, I came on 40 hours. That was kind of when we got our first little friends and family. We had some friends that, I think it's a really good idea. Hey, we can put in a little bit here and put in a little bit here. We kind of, scrounged together a few $1,000s and started doing that. But I think it was just that slow roll and really us focusing on our manufacturing that set us apart. And so it was within a few years that, we had a larger investor come to us. And that was really when, that was really like the, that's like the first chapter of Snacklins in my mind. Right. The first, 3 years were just a lot of grind, a lot of me just filling my car up. Yeah, we were working with some distributors, but it was just a grind. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like we were in some Whole Foods, but I was like having to deliver to a lot of these stores by hand or pay these small distributors an exorbitant amount of money just to get my product there because I couldn't drive out to, all the stores. And then once we got the investment, that's kind of when it all went. That's when, we brought on like John, our operations director. That's when we started, hiring like our CEO. We, upped the production staff, to like five full-time people making snacks all the time now, no questions asked, and we just kind of, that's when we really started building out our own facility.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of when everything started to snowball and really get bigger for us.
For those that don't know, talk to us about the process of building like a CPG or consumer packaged goods brand kind of from the beginning of like, you have an idea And then now you kind of have a product, like you figured it out, you know, you're packaging some stuff and you want to start selling it to people that like aren't in your contact list. How did you start getting some initial traction with those first sales and start getting in some stores?
So I mean, this is kind of the crazy part. It was semi-luck is how we got our very first store. And that was really because we were just kind of making them and selling them, right? But then we were at a bar, like a brewery, actually, just giving them out for free. People were paying us like a few bucks for like a little baggie, right?
Yeah.
And this guy who owned this local grocery store was like, hey, if you guys put nutrition facts on this, I could sell it. And I think this would do well as a local product. Mm. And so like first step is like you've got to find packaging and you've got to figure out whatever your nutrition labels are, right? That was like the first step, which like I was like, oh God, what's in, like, how do I even do a nutrition panel, you know?
Yeah.
And that was like my first, like, I remember I spent like weeks reading and learning everything I could because I didn't have the thousands of dollars just to pay some, you know, third party to do that for me. And then I think once you get that first store, then you kind of use that to get some smaller stores. And really, like, it's not like it's hard to get the – I think you're going to put in just as much effort. We put in just as much effort for the single stores as we do for the 500-store chains, right? And it's just – it's a different type of effort that you're putting in there. And I think, you know, when you're first starting off, like, you're not going to get a Whole Foods unless you randomly, you know – by the grace of God, know somebody who can get you a pitch. But, you know, really, that's not, you know, the chance. And so I think the best way is, like, you've got to get into these small stores. You have to really focus on that, you know. So you've got to demo, literally being in the store, being like, try a sample. Here's where we sell it. Try a sample. We sell it right back there. Buy some. Mm-hmm. Try a sample. Doing that, like, a million times, no joke. Like, I was demoing 3-4 times a week in any little independent store that sold us, like, juice bars that sold us. Like, I was just there. You know, and then I use that to get data because really it's this hard thing that I think CPG is a lot of like, is it the chicken or the egg first? You know, well, the stores don't want to take you unless you can show your data on how much you're selling per SKU per week, how well you're doing in other stores and competitive stores, what your price points are and how it's selling at that point. But yet you're not going to get the data unless you're in the store.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so really taking advantage of those small stores and collecting that data and really treating that data like it's gold, because that's really the only way. And then as you kind of grow and as you get bigger, then, you know, there's always manufacturing woes, which we could talk about some other day. But as far as like getting on shelf, I mean, 90% of that story is saying, hey, your competitor sells us and they sell a lot of it. You should too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you mentioned something interesting as kind of as part of the process of as you grow. You hired a CEO that is not you. Tell me about that decision of like, as you guys start to gain some traction, start to build your team, realizing that you wanted to hire a CEO that's not you, and what went into that decision? Cause that's unique.
I think, if anything, I'm self-aware.
Yeah.
Right. And when it was that one man show, you know, and then it became the one man, one woman show with me and Sylvia, like, I was wearing all the hats I could. I didn't mind wearing all the hats as the entrepreneur, but I realized that, you know, my invoicing skills are meh, you know, my ordering skills are meh, you know, like I wasn't good at operations. I wasn't really good at the marketing thing. Like I'm horrible at Instagram and social media. Like I wasn't good at all the other things, but I did them because I had to, but really I had this great tasting product, you know, and what I was good at was making this product and making it taste great and then developing new products. And so as we kind of grew and we brought on other investors, I mean, I'll be honest, they straight up said like, hey, if we invest, you know, we don't really think that you should be the CEO. And I looked at him in the eyes and I said, I 100% agree with that. You know, what do you think I should be doing? They go, did you make some of the best snacks I've ever had? And you know so much about the machines and so much about the back end and so much about how the food works that it's honestly a waste for you to be, you know, going through the bank account and trying to match invoices to, you know, to the banks, you know, to the checks, right? For you to be going through and having to deal with, you know, all right, well, let's schedule these promotions. Let's go to these collaborations. Like, it's not like, it's just that I'm better at making snacks. And so as a team, we've always kind of, you know, focused on like getting the people to do like, what are you the best at? What are you better at? That's what you focus on. And for me, I was better at making snacks. Kevin, he's better at being a CEO. And I 100% agree with that. And I think he would agree as well.
I think that's so important to kind of pause on and highlight, because a lot of people don't, they're not willing to do that. They think that like being a CEO is, you know, the sexiest thing. And also that if you're, you know, a founder, that that means that you kind of have to. And I think so many people are missing that self-awareness to where realizing like really honestly looking in the mirror and asking yourself a question of what is the best role for you in your own company. Because just because you have an idea or just because you started it doesn't mean that you're the one who's going to build it. And I think a lot of times founders don't hire another CEO. It's not usually until companies are huge. And I wonder how many companies could have actually grown out of the like small business phase if they would have been more self-aware.
I mean, I'll be honest, like it was life-changing. Like the way that our business is now is so much better than what it was, you know, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, right, before he started. Just because, you know, to have extra that fresh pair of eyes, someone who had more, I mean, he had way more experience. He's way smarter than me. He had way more experience than I did, you know, and that was, you know, the key. And I think, you know, along the same lines, it's, you know, it's about, I don't play sports, right? But I always give this analogy because I just feel like this is what sports are like, but I don't know shit about sports. So sorry, guys.
I'm excited.
But it's like, yeah. So like, you know, if you're on a basketball team, like I may be a really good shooter, but I'm not going to win the championship by myself, you know? And so understanding that, you know, every role on that court has its own specific thing. And like, you have to decide, is your goal to be like the superstar? Do you want to be the biggest player on the team, or do you want to win a championship? And if you want to win a championship, then there's the possibility that other superstars are going to outshine you, and you have to be cool with that, mm-hmm. you know? And I think like, I've always had the mentality of like winning that championship, you know, as opposed to me personally becoming a superstar. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great analogy. What does that end goal look like for you? Like for Snacklins, is it just snack domination, or what are some of the goals and kind of dreams that you have for the company?
I think, you know, I think there's twofold. I think there's like, what do we want to accomplish, you know, like culturally, right, as Snacklins? Like, and I think that what I really like, and I kind of look at, you know, kind of what Sun Chips did, right? Sun Chips aren't even that healthy for you, but they were so much healthier than anything else at the time. You know what I mean? They were just like mm-hmm. that much bit healthier than anything else out there. And, you know, it kind of forced like people were buying Sun Chips, and like when Subway was selling, like people were buying those, and they were a lot. And then Frito-Lay acquired them, right? And then you kind of have this, now you have people being like, ah, well, maybe we should have a little healthier alternative. You know, maybe we should do that. And I think that, you know, culturally we would like to really kind of put an emphasis down on like simple, fresh, and delicious, you know, can also be healthy. You know, mm-hmm. it can also be good, right? It doesn't have to be like healthy per se, but it's just not bad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that that's something that we can do, and also showing that you can do it without breaking the bank. I mean, a bag of Snacklins is way cheaper than a bag of kale chips. You know, a bag of Snacklins costs just the same amount as any of the other puffs or snacks at the grocery store that you're buying, except for you can read the ingredients, you know? Right. And I think culturally that's kind of where, that's what I really think would be cool, to kind of see a shift. I'm not going to change the world, man, but if I could just like shift it a little bit in this direction, I know like, great, I had something to do with that positive change. I think that's cool. I think yeah. as a business, I think my shareholders, my coworkers that have, you know, equity in the company, I think they all would probably say that we would like to sell.
Yeah.
Or be acquired, you know, or merge with somebody, you know, and find a way to make our lives better. You know, yeah. Money is real, man. Yeah. Money is real. And for, you know, a bunch of us that, you know, have never been raised around a lot of money, like that's a real thing. And like, that's not a bad reason for us to wake up and go work hard every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that. Like your upbringing and why maybe like an acquisition or building a business, working really, really hard to then be able to have that kind of financial freedom. Like why is that? Tell me more about why that's like attractive to you, and also just like why do you I think we don't talk about like why we want money enough. Like it's kind of like stigmatized, and I mm-hmm. think like I think it's okay to talk about like why do you want money. So I'd love to know a little bit more about that piece of your story and why that's something that motivates you.
I think it's about giving opportunities to people that gave opportunities to you, right? I think that opportunities come either in the society, if you happen to be lucky enough to be born and raised or live in an area that is, you know, super supportive and everyone's kind of being taken care of and, you know, you have that, then maybe you don't need that kind of support, you know, and you can just succeed on your own, right? But, you know, I feel like, you know, or the other side is you're rich, right? You got money, so you can kind of take your time. You can think a little bit more about it, you know? And I know that everyone that came and started working for Snacklings that believed in my crazy dream and, you know, has given up blood, sweat, and tears, has given up hours, has destroyed vacations, you know what I mean? Like, all of them, they all have their own dreams and they want to make their own opportunities. And I've realized that Snacklings is a lucky break for me to help give opportunities to people, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that when it comes down to it, like, I bet our, you know, our head of marketing, Jeremy, he probably wants to start up his own business one day, you know, and he wants to do something along that side. Well, it's a lot easier to start up your business if you got a little cash in your bank account. You know what I mean? You can take your time. You can be more thoughtful about it. You're not worried about making money on day one. Like, once we got that investment, it was Snacklings could actually start focusing on, okay, how do we want to do this? What do we want to keep? And really building out that manufacturing so that we could do that the right way. And we lost, and you're going to lose money doing that. You know what I mean? And so we needed money so that we could spend that time mm-hmm. to get to the point that we are now, you know? And I think that, you know, it's yes, we hustle, we grind. I mean, I've slept in my car more times than I'd like to admit, you know, during the beginning years of Snacklings. And actually, I sleep in my car still now because I just find it comfortable sometimes. It's, you know, reminiscent of the old days driving up and down in New York. But, you know, I think that, you know, for me to have that opportunity, for me to be able to offer my kid, you know, something that I was never offered, you know, for me to be able to say, like, hey, guess what? Why don't you get the job that you want to do, that you think you can be the most impactful doing? Because the nice thing is the money's already taken care of, so you can actually do something good. Like, we have a very good friend of ours that comes from a very, he comes from a pretty well-off family, and he is just the nice, and he realizes how he was raised. His parents worked their butts off so that he could sit there, and he is there changing the world, doing, you know, doing the universe's work, doing God's work, you know, stuff that in my head I would only love to somehow be part of and be able to make that kind of change. And you realize that he gets that opportunity because he doesn't have to worry about paying rent. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't have to worry about having, you know, a meal on the table. And I think, call it whatever, man, but, you know, no one wants to be hungry, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's the opportunity to be able to give financial resources, pass it down to your family. But then I also just think the example, I mean, this is the story you're in the middle of. It is a dream that so many people have of being able to, you know, chart your own way and build your own future. And it's more possible now than it ever has been. And it's more accessible to be able to do things like that than it ever has mm-hmm. been. So I think that's amazing that motivates you. And again, I think it's good to talk about, like, people say money doesn't buy happiness, and it's like, no, it doesn't, but it does it gives you some of the opportunities to buy things that maybe do make you happy and do things that do make you happy.
It's not going to buy you happiness, but it gives you breathing room.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really all you can hope for, you know?
Yeah. And not everybody grew up with breathing room. And so it's just that security is huge. So I think it's going to be fun to see because, I mean, your guys' branding, your marketing is amazing. Like, people should take a look. Like, it's just, it's fun. Like, your packaging is fun. And
shout out to Jeremy, Olivia, and Kevin. They're the people that did that.
Yeah, so it's like, the brand is awesome. So I can totally see an acquisition play in the future. What about, like, let's just talk about snacks. So you're the snack guy. So what are some of your favorite snacks? Like, if, let's say, like, if you could only have like three snacks for the next year, what would those be?
I mean, honestly, I'm a horrorito. Like, I eat so many Doritos that I'm just like a horror for them. Like, I like, because Doritos to me, not only does it have that nostalgia, but it's a great tasting snack. You know what I mean? It is great. Like, it's consistent. When I get Doritos, I know it's going to be the same no matter what part of the United States I bought it, whether I bought it at a, you know, in a fancy hotel and they're, you know, in the little, whatever, in that, what do you call it? It's a stupid thing in your hotel room. Whatever that is. And I bought it at a hotel, the mini bar, or I bought it, you know, at like a random gas station on the side of the highway. Like, it tastes good, you know? And so I've always kind of been, I like them for flavor, and I'm a big, whenever I travel, I like to try to eat as many. And I will tell you that if you ever get a chance, the barbecue Doritos from Malaysia are nothing but made by the hands of gods. Okay. They are delicious. And I think also like kind of my obsession with snacking is being raised in Iowa and then my cousins and my family being in Tunisia, right? We had way different snacking patterns, you know, like my mom was trying to raise me like all the other kids at school were. So if they went to school with a bag of chips and a sandwich, I went to school with a bag of chips and a sandwich. You know what I mean? But then you come to Tunisia, you go to the other countries and like, it's actually more of a snack. It's more of this like fun break, like, ooh, let's try this as opposed to part of your meal.
Yeah. How does it differ? Like what, if we're in Tunisia, like just eating patterns and snacks and how we interact with snacks, yeah, so how does it differ?
They're opening up potato. Like if you're like sitting around and it's late and you're drinking, like, ah, I've got some potato chips. Let me get those. You know, where in America, it's like, oh, hey, we just grilled a bunch of chicken. Let's open up some potato chips. That'll be our side. You know what I mean? Yeah. Where in Tunisia, they would never do that. And like, I found the same to be like in Asia and a lot of the Asian countries, like in Southeast Asia, like especially that, you know, and that's kind of why you have all these crazy, awesome flavors coming from there, because they're not trying to find an accompaniment to their sandwich and apple. They're trying to find something that's just like, hey, we're here, we're hanging out. What's this flavor? You know, what's this, you know, flavor, you know, experience going to be like? What's this adventure going to be like? And so, I mean, dude, like if you ever get like, you can find the ones that you can find pretty easily are like the hot pot Lays are great. If you ever get like the Chinese Sichuan hot pot Lays, phenomenal. Hmm. Any cucumber flavored Lays will just blow your mind because it tastes like cucumber, but it's made with like potatoes. Huh. I also like, you know, I also think like, you know, I'm a really big fan of like Hers and Utz, right?
Yeah.
And I like them more just for their steadfastness. You know, if you think about kind of how breweries used to be back in the day, how you pretty much just had all these, here's your city, you got that brewery that kind of covers that. You kind of had much more regionalized, you know, breweries and stuff like that. And then they all just kind of shut down and you kind of had the big three, right? That's how potato chips used to be too, man. You know what I mean? Like, you just got the chips that were made in your little area and someone made potato chips there and that was the brand. But then slowly the big brands took it over. But, yo, Hers is still here. Like, Utz is still here. You know, and Utz is like, they're like public now. You know what I mean? Like, they've grown. I think it's very, very cool to see how these people have managed to, you know, to stay steadfast, right? You know, because snacking, like you said, it's huge. Like, it's a huge industry, and even though we're like, look at how much we sold, we realize that is nothing more than like a molecule in a drop of in a bucket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like even, and it's interesting to think of like how fast you guys have been growing and, you know, how many, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of Snacklands are sold. But then also realizing like, wow, people go through so many snacks. Like that's so, it's interesting to think about building a business where, you know, you're not selling, it's not like a service industry where you're, you know, you're selling several $1,000 consulting packages at a time where you don't need that mm-hmm. many clients. It's like, you know, how much business do you need when you're selling, you know, $2-3 packs at a time? Like that's the whole
thing. I mean, we're really fighting for a dollar of your time. You know what I mean? For a dollar at a time where, you know, you buy one of these phones and there you go. Boop. They just got $900 from you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and so I think, you know, especially with the variety, I'm like, there's a lot of really awesome, not big brand snacks out there. You know what I mean? Like stuff that is really crazy good. Like I'll give a shout out, like 12 Tides. They literally look like Snacklings kind of, but they're made with seaweed, like kelp. They're awesome. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're really doing some really cool stuff, you know, and I think it tastes delicious. And there's a lot of cool companies like that are doing stuff like that. And I think that as we broaden our palates in the United States, you know, you'll kind of see, I think, more of on the coast, you're going to see like thousands of varieties of snacks, you know. Maybe once you kind of go more inland, mm-hmm. it may still kind of dwindle down a little bit. Yeah. But
well, even in the next like 10, 20 years, you know, America will no longer be majority white. And so as America just gets more diverse, you know, I think similarly the food and the styles will as well. Where are you guys distributing now? Like, where, what states can people get you guys in?
I mean, you can pretty much get us East and West Coast. Those are going to be your best bets. So if you're like on the East Coast, anything from like a Stop and Shop to a Giant to a Whole Foods, yeah. You got like on the West Coast, you got like the Gelson's and the Erewhon's of the world, Metropolitan Markets of the world. If you just honestly, if you go to snacklands.com, boom.
Yeah.
You go to the store locator, tell you where they are. And like, I will tell you this, like, we're launching all the Whole Foods in the Midwest and Pacific Northwest here coming up.
Cool.
So come like in the next month or so, you should be seeing a lot more
stuff. So maybe I'll actually be able to get Snacklands here in Colorado sometime.
Actually, I think very soon.
Cool.
We just opened up that distribution center for Colorado.
So. That's awesome. So you're not CEO. Are you like the CSO? Is that like the chief snack officer? Like, what are you?
I used to call myself the chief snack bagger.
Okay.
Right? And I had that in all my emails. I even put it on my business cards.
Yeah.
And then slowly our CEO just started calling me product manager, like a product development manager.
Okay.
Or head of product development.
So are you just like a mad scientist, like in the kitchen, like just trying to make new things all the time?
I think, yeah. I mean, that's my hobby.
I love it.
I mean, I come home and I cook weird stuff and I go to work. I mean, I have a list of, you know, a Gmail list that's just long, long, long of all the weird things I've made from like tonight I'm making sweet corn ice cream because it's like beautiful sweet corn time. And I was like, I want to make some ice cream with the sweet corn. You know what I mean? So it's not like crazy, crazy scientific right. stuff, but I like to, you know, bend flavors. I like this, you know, I'm currently very into like seasonality, ripeness, and then how you extract the best flavor out of that at that peak time. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, you know, doing a lot of weird experiments, but yeah, my friends like coming here because you just open the fridge and there's always going to be something pickled, fermented,
yeah.
some weird fish or animal hanging in the fridge. So it's always, you know, it's always a good time opening. It's a good time opening up the fridge here.
That's awesome. Well, Sammy, I love your story because, you know, it's a business that was birthed out of something you're passionate about. It wasn't just you seeing an opportunity and chasing money. It was really diving deeper into something you care about. And then also I love just how it's non-traditional, you know, in a sense that you have the self-awareness to realize like, hey, I don't have all of the resources to build this. Like, we're going to need help. And that's not a weakness. That's a strength. And so I think, you know, I encourage our listeners to really take a look in the mirror and just look and ask the question, who do you need? Like, who else do you need? And should you be the number one person making all the business decisions? Or is there a place that you can be more focused? And so I love your story. I think it's encouraging. And I hope that, you know, our audience, that they can take some time to do that as well.
I'm going to add on to that too.
Yeah, please.
Don't be stingy. Don't be stingy, guys. Like, you now own 100% of nothing. Right.
Yeah.
And so the more you take care of your people, the more you're willing to share that opportunity with the people around you, like you will see your 100% of nothing go to be, you know, 50-25% of something massive out of your wildest dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about that when they're debating, you know, getting investors and partners and different things. It's like, okay, well, would you rather have 100% of a really small pie, or would you rather have, you know, 60% or 40% or 20% of like freaking the biggest pie that there is? So I think, yeah, that's great words of wisdom and advice. What's the best way for people to find you and stay in touch with Sammy Snacklands?
Oh, you can actually always email me, sammy@snacklands.com. Or if you just find any of the social medias, Eat Snacklands, tell them that you want to talk to Sammy and they'll send you over to me. They'll literally just copy your message and then email it to me, and then I'll respond back.
That's awesome. Well, Sammy, thanks so much for coming on the show. We love getting to share your story on the Small Business Storytellers, and let me know when Colorado's open because I'm going to have to go and get some.
I got you.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.